Morning, Michael.
Good morning, Tess.
What have you been watching this week?
Well, there's so much that I've been watching and so much there is for people to see. I've got three films to talk about.
Three, yeah.
So many, so I better get into them. I'll start with a film called Skate Kitchen. This showed at last year's Sydney Film Festival and was quite popular. It stars Rochelle Vinberg, Jaden Smith, Nina Moran and Jules Lorenzo. It's written and directed by Crystal Moselle. It's about Camille, played by Rochelle Vinberg. She lives on Long Island with her single mother, who doesn't like the fact that Camille's favourite pastime is skateboard riding.
It's not a phase, Mum.
Yeah, Mum's prejudices are compounded when Camille credit cards herself one day. I'll leave that up to your imagination what credit carding is. But that leads to conflict and Camille leading a secret double life, telling Mum she's off to the library when instead she's taking the train into Manhattan, where she meets up with a group of like-minded young women / girls who love to skateboard as much as she does.
I feel like of all the things in films that kids lie to their parents about to sneak out and go to, skateboarding is one of the less ridiculously extreme dangerous activities.
Well, you'd think so, but this mother, she's a bit concerned about her daughter and has forbidden her to do so. Now, this storyline, it's a fairly simple, pretty much coming-of-age film, albeit with an indie, edgy twist. It's most likely with a lot of improvised dialogue from some very enthusiastic but kind of so-so actors and plenty of skateboard riding sequences through the streets of Manhattan. If you get motion sick easily, this may not be the film for you. Now, also, Jaden Smith is one of the few male characters in this film. He kind of pops up as a love interest and source of conflict between Camille and the other girls. But I don't really get what they're all so angry about. He's kind of a nondescript character and he's also a bit of a douche. So it's just kind of weird that they all get so emotional about him. Anyway, Skate Kitchen, it has a naturalistic sort of fly on the wall or camera operator on a skateboard feel to it. And at times it also reminded me of Larry Clark's Kids. Did you catch that one?
Nope.
Well, is it? But thankfully, when I say it reminds me of Kids, it's not for the scene that those of you who have seen Kids are probably thinking about right now. Anyway, for what it is, Skate Kitchen probably rolls on about 15 minutes too long at 106 minutes, but it's a fairly digestible meal. Move on to another film called Loro. This is an Italian film. It stars Tony Servillo, Elena Sofia Ricci, and Riccardo Scamaccio. It's directed by Paolo Sorrentino. Now, Loro is purportedly a film about the life of Italian prime minister, football club owner, media mogul, Bunga Bunga party host, Silvio Berlusconi.
It's quite the resume.
Indeed. Now, Loro was originally released in two parts in Italian cinemas, but both parts have been cut together to be made into a very long single film for consideration as Italy's entry into the Best Foreign Film category at this year's Academy Awards. Does it have a chance to win? Well, there is some great acting from Tony Servillo as Berlusconi and plenty of Bunga Bunga, but I get the feeling that too much has been cut out of both films for the storyline to make much sense to the non-Italian viewer. Unless you've been following the machinations and intrigues of Italian politics over the last 25 years, you're probably going to struggle to grasp what the hell is going on most of the time. Now, what I worked out is that they are obviously trying to get to Berlusconi to ride the government contract gravy train, but it's never really clear who they are and what exactly they want behind the flashy, over-the-top, hyper-realistic style of filmmaking, the mountains of cocaine, and the seemingly endless parade of swimsuit models and Albanian prostitutes. It was all a bit of a mess. I just didn't get it. It's all very colourful and exciting at first, but once the initial thrill wears off and the drugs kick in, this Bunga Bunga party just gets confusing and drags on to a fairly underwhelming climax.
Oh, good. And how long does it go if it's two films stitched together?
Well, pretty close to 3 hours.
Oh, ew.
Which is a bit long for a film that's very difficult to follow.
I feel like that's a bit long for any film. That's just me, maybe.
Well, yes, so given the amount of films that you watch.
Yeah. All three.
Yes. We'll move on to our third film of the day.
All right.
Mary Queen of Scots, starring Saoirse Ronan, Margot Robbie, Jack Lowden, Guy Pearce, and a whole bunch of conniving, weak-willed, double-crossing, power-hungry dudes who'll stop at nothing to keep the sisterhood down to further their own ambitions for power.
I have heard of this one because I saw the pictures going around the internet a few months ago of Margot Robbie, the backstage photos of her all done up as Mary Queen of Scots, and she didn't look anything like herself.
Actually, she's dressed up as Queen Elizabeth I. Oh. Saoirse Ronan plays Mary Queen of Scots in this one.
Oh,
but
God.
It's okay. I know I've seen those pictures too, and I've actually seen the film. This feminist take on Mary Queen of Scots story, directed by Josie Rourke in her feature directorial debut. It's based on John Guy's book, Queen of Scots, The Life of Mary Stuart. Now, Mary Stuart, she was Queen of France at 16 and widowed at 18 when she decided to return to Scotland in 1561 to reclaim what she believed was rightfully hers. That was the thrones of Scotland and England. She just had one problem. Queen Elizabeth I was already on that throne.
That does pose an issue.
And she wasn't prepared to give it up very easily. So we have two powerful women caught up very much in a man's world. You know, it was 1561. This film is based on the 25-year correspondence and negotiation between the two women. Now, Saoirse Ronan, she plays Mary as a passionate, headstrong and ambitious queen, whilst Margot Robbie is a bit more circumspect. Obviously, she's forced to ugly up due to, you know, Queen Elizabeth I's unfortunate bout of smallpox.
Ooh.
And so, like I said, she's much more considered, circumspect and clear thinking in her approach to the relationship. And she's also much better advised by William Cecil, the sort of moustache-twirling William Cecil. That's Guy Pearce under that silly wig and beard. By contrast, Mary is betrayed at almost every turn, and sometimes more than once, by her half-brother, her father-in-law, her second husband, and even her sworn protector, Lord Bothwell. Men are bastards. You'll certainly be convinced of this by the end of the film, if you didn't already believe it. Apart from the feminist angle, another interesting aspect of this film is the depiction of an ethnically diverse court in both England and Scotland. I'd be rather interested to know if that was indeed the case or whether there's just been a bit of artistic license taken here. Another thing about this period film is that it feels a little bit Shakespearean.
Okay.
Perhaps that's just the language they're using or whatever.
It's the wigs.
And the wigs. But it does, there is a touch of the Shakespeare about it. Anyway, this is probably not the most historically accurate account of Mary, Queen of Scots' life. You know, maybe about as accurate as, you know, Braveheart was of William Wallace's. But there's still some great costumes and some really memorable scenes in this film, but probably not one to lose your head over.
Hey, ba-dumps. Thanks so much, Michael.
Pleasure.